For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to the top of the weekend. It's the Friday show. Now, our TNT talk show host and producer, extraordinaire Dede Denslow, was running as an independent candidate for a council seat in Plymouth, England. Now, the results came in. Dede's not going to be in today. His first time out running an election, he got 5% of the vote, which first time out from an unknown candidate is actually pretty good. His party did get three candidates elected, and that's really, really great news. So they're making progress in Plymouth. Now, the thing is this. He wasn't content to sit there and let the 15-minute cities be forced on him. And the fact that they cut down, the left voted to cut down 200, I believe the number was 200 historic trees in the middle of the city in the name of, believe it or not, green politics. Yeah, they're conservationists, all right. We'll cut the trees down. That way, you know, we can save them as firewood later on. I don't know. But they did that. So he's getting very active, and it's a lesson for all of us. We all should be. It's an example at the local level. Getting offline, getting out there, and talking to the people in your own neighborhood, your own cities, your own state, or counties, or however it's delineated. It is important. And this is what people used to do before the internet. It takes more time. You get your hands dirty. Yeah. But you get to know the people around you again. Which is the most important thing, rebuilding that sense of community. And that's how to beat all this disastrous politic going on. Whether or not you agree with somebody, it's, you know, to a large degree respecting their views unless they're, you know, hurtful to society. There is a caveat to that. I'm for inclusiveness depending on how you define it. Not everybody has a right to speak publicly. Yeah, shocking, huh? I've had to live with listening to Nazis speaking publicly for 9 years. And that politic is not a good thing. So anything extreme like that, because when they get in power, to be clear, we're going to destroy everybody that hates us or doesn't agree with us. We don't want that kind of talk. Okay? It's not good for our societies. What Darren Denslow is doing in Plymouth is actually, it's something that, I'm proud to recognize it on the show because it's a big step for anybody to actually do that. Make a jump into that kind of game or any other and get involved. So that's a great thing. Now, I want to talk about Russia's response to the drone strike on the Kremlin. And Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, responded to it after a meeting of foreign ministers in India. And he said that Russia will respond to the drone attack on the Kremlin with action. Instead of debating whether it was a reason for war, and what that means is, and according to other statements, Zelensky and his cabinet and his government are running for cover. Because what this has done as basically a violation, as I said, on the moratorium of going after a country's leader. That's what Ukraine has done. And it's a very scary thing because, you know, let's say you're successful and you take out the country's leadership. There's no one to surrender. There's no one to direct anything. There's no one to actually run anything. And what you end up with is Mogadishu in like the early 1990s. Recall, if you will, the film Black Hawk Down and the horror show that they were walking into there. When the UN actually tried to act in a positive way and feed people in a region that was destitute of government, and anyone that actually gave a shit. Hundreds of thousands of people starved to death because of what the warlords were doing. So we'll see what's going to go on with that. Now, if we go back a couple of months, and it's actually an interesting thing. Do you remember that American MQ-9 Reaper drone that a Russian aviation pilot took out by peeing jet fuel on it and blinding it, so it crashed into the Black Sea? Well, the U.S. wasn't worried about it being recovered because it was in too deep of water, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? The Russians lifted that Reaper out of the bottom of the Black Sea, and they are going fine-combing the technology and whatever else they can salvage from it right now. So was that actually a smart move on the American side to send a Reaper into a war zone when they'd been warned against that already? And, you know, this adds insult to injury. This really does. Joe Biden, Joint Chiefs at the Pentagon, you know, I hope you feel your own boot up your tukka right now, because you did this. It had to have been approved at that level because of the fact that it was that big a provocation for the Russian. And, you know, from here out, I guess we can expect more. But what they, you know, they may or may not have the software that the U.S. said, well, they, you know, they deleted before it hit the water. Well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I'll never know. And I really don't care. What they do have is the basis of taking these things down now. And that's all they really should care about. What do you think about that? These Reaper drones are about to become antique very, very shortly. Now, if we move on a little bit, and this is how bad politics are actually progressing among diplomats right now between Ukraine and the rest of the world. Now, at the Parliamentary Assembly of the Black Sea Economic Cooperation conference that was held in Ankara, Turkey, members of the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine at the summit started trying to protest while the Russian delegation was speaking. And they were actually holding up the blood and soil flag from World War II. The blood and soil flag. This is an overt Nazi flag that Ukraine uses, right sector uses. There's a reason why it's a nationalist flag for these violent groups. And it celebrates the Holocaust in reverse. It celebrates the people that did it. It celebrates the murderers in the villages. And they're at this economic forum screaming at the Russian delegation holding this bad boy up. Well, the Turkish the speaker for the Turkish parliament, Mustafa Sentop, is actually and rightfully outraged over the whole thing. And he reacted really harshly. And he said, we can't allow this here. Remove it, and we will not allow it. And he tried to remove the participants, which were senators of Ukraine, from the hall because of the misbehaving they did. Now, right after that, Russian Senator Olga Timofeeva was giving an interview. And the speaker, the Ukrainian Verkhovna Rada member, Alexander Marikovsky, came up behind her, holding up the Ukrainian flag. Now, you know, these people are in a conflict with each other. But, you know, honestly, this Russian delegate is talking in an interview with a news station, and this guy comes up, and honestly, it's like holding two fingers behind someone's head. You want to talk about a childish move? And insulting. Given the situation, it's very, very insulting, which is how he meant it. Well, a representative from the Russian delegation grabbed the flag, started walking away with it, and then Ukraine's Marikovsky chased him down into this big foyer and started pummeling him with his fists. I mean, you know, honestly, it really made Ukraine's it made Ukraine really shine who they are, what they are at heart. Just a bunch of thugs. Just a bunch of thugs. This conference wasn't about the war. It was about economic cooperation with member countries for that group that both Ukraine and Russia belong to. Now, you know, honestly, you don't have to be nice to each other, but in that type of situation, given that you're the diplomatic face of your country, and this is in front of other countries that you want their support, it would help if you didn't act like a five-year-old child throwing a fit. Showing a little dignity would be a good thing, especially for a beggar nation like Ukraine. I mean, am I right or am I right? So, you know, it really looked disgusting. And, you know, the thing about it, too, that actually struck me is, you know, when I was younger, I did combat sports a little bit. And this Ukrainian didn't know how to fight. The only reason why he was able to strike this diplomat, actually two reasons. One, he sucker punched him, came up from behind him. The guy didn't see it coming until it was too late. And two, the diplomat wasn't interested in fist fighting at a conference. And that was it. This guy fought like a 12-year-old girl. He was hitting it. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed. Yeah, this is a Ukrainian. This is how they act. They act like little five-year-olds. And if they actually can't surprise you to murder you, this is how they act. And that's it. That's their best game. Now, one of the things that this woman, Olga Timofeeva, one of the points she was bringing up during the conference, and during the interview, was she's questioning Russia's place in PACE, which is a European security group. Why even bother being there? Why should Russia be there? And then this happens. So honestly, for the Russians, why bother being there? And then it turns out, you know, at the same time all this is going on, and it just gets better. Now, we thought the whole thing about the Russian frozen assets was over because there is no legal magic that they've been able to pull out in the course of a couple of years. They've been trying to figure this out for years. How do we steal Russia's money, like $300 billion, and give it to Ukraine? Huh? Well, they couldn't do it. Well, Belgium wants to transfer 200 million euros of proceeds from frozen assets to Ukraine. And according to the Belgian Prime Minister, Alexander De Croes, the use of these funds for the military needs of Ukraine and its restoration makes sense both from an economic point of view and from a moral point of view. So stealing money from baseless sanctions when on a country and, you know, you're destroying the international financial, you know, stability, you know, at the same time, why would countries put their assets in foreign banks anymore if they're going to be stolen? As soon as somebody doesn't like you, he wants to steal the money, even though at this point it's been determined it's not legal, because it's a great economic point. It makes sense from an economic point of view. Well, what is that point of view? Well, if Ukraine is going to be rebuilt, where in the hell is the money going to come from? Who's going to pay for it? Certainly not Ukraine. They can't. So he wants to get his country out from under that. And, you know, maybe this will be Belgium's contribution to it. I don't know. Oh, we don't actually have to give money. We gave sanctioned money. So, you know, it's like NATO dues. We're exempt. I mean, is this how it's going to work? Maybe they'll pay Ukraine in crypto dollars. So that way no one has to give any money. Maybe they'll just keep printing them in the U.S. and no one actually has to do anything at that point. You know, it'll be the last great gasp of the American economy and financial system. And it is crazy stuff going on in the world today. Now, are you listening? Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you enjoy the show? And do you think we're doing a good job? And especially if you think I'm doing a good job right now, please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The number one issue truly is Tucker Carlson was off the reservation on pharmaceutical, which apparently Roger Ailes told RFK Jr. in like 2015 that 70 or 80% of all Fox News or cable news revenue was coming from pharmaceuticals. Well, not Tucker's show. Tucker's show appeared to be Tunnel for Towers and MyPillow was the only advertisers that were left with him. He lost all of his corporate advertisers, which probably led to him even being more free from the shackles of the corporate control and or mainstream. So I don't know that in our lifetime we'll see that kind of power of a host doing a show like that on cable news with that kind of audience and influence and impact. Sure, you can have a Joe Rogan. Sure, you can have a million different podcasters doing heavy doors. It's just not the same.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're invited to join the pilgrimage to Bath, United Kingdom this June, where we will unveil a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty. The Better Way Conference is a three-day solutions-based conference with more than 50 expert speakers from around the world. Our Master of Ceremonies, Neil Oliver, will take us on a journey through eight inspiring conversations, addressing the issues that matter most to individuals and families around the world right now. Hear from speakers like Dr. Pierre Corey, Matthias Desmet, Dr. Vandana Shiva, and other leading international minds as we continue to co-create a better way forward. Panel hosts include James Corbett of The Corbett Report, Richard Vobes, The Bald Explorer, and the New Americans, Veronica Karolinko, and many more. Wherever you are in the world, you can join us in person or online for less than £40 or $50 for the full program. Get your full conference, single day, or virtual passes now at betterwayconference.org. Please join, share, and collaborate with us as we create a better way for a better world.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back. Now, here's a story from Artemovsk. And until recently, it was known as Bakhmut. Yevgeny Prigozhin is getting a little tired of not the lack of support he's getting from Moscow these days. He's not getting the ammunition and weaponry that he needs to keep going very much longer. And he's complaining about it because the dwindling supplies is, according to him, getting his men killed at this point in Bakhmut, even though they've won the city pretty much. So what he's done, and it's a very, very bold move, he's complained to Moscow, to the Duma, and he told them either send what we need or we're pulling out on May 9th. So after all this fighting, after everything, can you imagine this? He walks out and the Ukrainians walk back into Bakhmut again. Do you think that's going to happen? What are your thoughts on this? Now, he found in the salt mines miles and miles of stacks and stacks of weapons. The problem is they're Ukrainian and the caliber and everything is different, so he would have to literally rearm every soldier they have, and they can't do that. All these weapons in there are fairly useless to him. You know, it's horrible. But May 9th is because that is Victory Day. That's Victory Over Nazism Day in Russia and Donbass and everywhere else. That's a celebration where, and this started in around, I think it was 2015, they started having parade of the remembrance for people's relatives that fought in the war, and citizens walk with pictures of their grandparents, grandmothers, grandfathers, because they both fought here. So you have millions of people marching in Moscow, celebrating their parents, grandparents' sacrifice for the victory over Nazism. And here's Yevgeny Prigozhin saying he's going to throw a wrench in the works because, you know, if you don't send what we need, we're leaving. And all the work we've done in Bakhmut was for nothing, and we're not going to, you know, get our soldiers killed for nothing. So what I think is going to happen is those ammunition supply trucks are going to be traveling very, very fast from Russia to there for resupply. That's what I see happening. Because the political fallout from this, and, you know, here's the reality. He's saying that, you know, it's corruption with some of the people in the Senate. Okay. In a big way, it could be just mishandled paperwork, because that's all it takes. It could be a lot of things. Like I said, if Wagner Group pulls out of Bakhmut, Ukraine will walk back in, and they'll be able to build it because they understand what they're up against now. They'll be able to build defenses that it'll take 8 months to tear down, and they'll be able to do that very fast. So it's not a good deal. The best and easiest thing to do is to get those supply trucks on the road for Yevgeny Prigozhin's Wagner, who have been carrying a very, very big load this entire time for a PMC. I mean, really think about that. They've been doing a great job. They've actually saved a lot of Ukrainian soldiers on the battlefield, believe it or not. Their medics are picking up all the wounded. They're actually burying all the dead Ukrainian soldiers. He's adhering to the Geneva Convention, which is pretty wild because, you know, he isn't a state formation. This is a private military formation. So they're not actually in tune. They're not actually obligated to Geneva. So it's actually, you know, it's a really, they're doing a really, really good job sorting out the battlefield as they go. And, you know, I know you don't hear that often. I don't talk about him often, but I'm going to start doing that a bit. I've developed a lot of respect for this guy and what he's doing, as well as his soldiers, because they operate in the best tradition. Most of them are former military. And, you know, it's not guys that want to go out and Wagner is set up a little differently than, you know, we'll say a Blackwater, which would be considered an aggressive PMC. They'll fight anywhere for anyone, do anything. They're in China right now, you know, taking care of Chinese stuff. Wagner is set up to be defensive, which is how the laws run for PMCs in Russia. Now, the fact that they've been taking aggressive work is because of the situation where Russia came across the line in 2022, February. And he's defending his country's interests, and that's it. Other than that, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I honestly think he'll get the weapons he needs, because it would be May 9th, Victory Day, would definitely be a day to remember if he doesn't, and they leave Artemovsk or Bakhmut, however you want to term it. Now, what else is going on with this? And this is another thing to keep in mind for May 9th and going forward. This is projecting war crimes, terrorist acts. Now, let's say something happens to a power plant, a hydroelectric power plant, a nuclear power plant. Well, there'll be risks for the population, and this will require immediate attention from the government. The accumulation of resources, which is trucks, equipment, etc., materials, including soldiers. This is Minister of Defense for Ukraine, Reznikov, saying this. What he's saying is that they're not just going after, you know, like a power plant, all right? They're talking about, if you're talking about a hydroelectric power plant, you're talking about taking out a dam. So you're talking about a head of water that is probably over 100 feet high. That stretches back, you know, once it's released, a few hundred miles before it starts settling down again. This, the weight of that waterhead, that head, will crush houses as it comes across them. Anything in its path. So it's not just a matter of just drowning, you're crushed underneath it. Water is a very, very powerful force of nature. And he's talking about, well, this is what's going to happen. So just like that drone strike and some of the bombings that Ukraine is doing in residential areas in Russia proper, they're talking about going after plants like this. So dams, nuclear power plants. Now, this is something that should alarm everybody. A country that wants to go after nuclear power plants, Now, with their own at Zaporozhye, they were trying to make dirty bombs there. That was found out. The Russians tried to keep it open, tried to keep power going to Ukraine, and Ukraine kept knocking that out. Ukraine kept shelling the Zaporozhye plant. And we found out that the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is supposed to be a protection for nuclear power plants, setting standards and making sure that those standards are held, started to side with their contract over their actual function, the job. Ukraine had a contract with them. Russia does not. They're not signed on with the IAEA. So even though these IAEA inspectors are there, they can see where this fire is coming from, they're allowing Ukraine and the world to say that it's Russia attacking those plants. Now Ukraine is saying, well, we'll just go after the plants themselves in Russia. What do you think? Now, here's a question. If DU rounds, depleted uranium rounds, used in the war, and the ones that come from the UK qualify for this, constitute crossing a red line because it's the equivalent of a dirty bomb, which they are, contamination, a source of radiological illness for, you know, God knows how many decades. I mean, can you imagine 50, 60 years of child deformities, of cancers, of, you know, whatever? All right, that's a red line for Russia. It should be. It should be a red line for Ukraine. Why would you want to do this if you want to keep the land? No, seriously, why would you want to do this? Is it even an option of last resort? Are there other ways to accomplish the task that don't have such long-lasting deleterious effects on the population that you say you're sworn to protect? Well, the answer is, yeah, there are a lot. And this is war. You know, it needs to be, you can be close, and close is close enough. What happens if Ukraine doesn't fire these DU rockets? Too simplistic, right? They blow up a nuclear power plant core in Russia. What do you think happens? Is that an escalation? What should the response be? The strike was nuclear. But see, that wouldn't be considered a nuclear weapon. Believe it or not, it would be considered a giant dirty bomb. That's essentially what it is, giant dirty bomb. Would nuclear weapons be the appropriate response at that point? A couple handfuls of nationalist terrorists go take out a nuclear power plant. Is the response to blow up Kiev? This is where things, and this is why Ukrainian politics is so dangerous. They don't have any regard for their own people. If you're a nationalist, they'll get you out of Kiev before that happens. If you're not a nationalist, you won't even know what's going on until you hear that air siren, that air raid siren, that something big is coming. You'll never even know. But your part in the body count will certainly be on CNN the next day or that day. It'll be, what, another round of sanctions? Where do we go from there? Russia doesn't need to go nuclear to destroy Kiev. A couple of those Kinzhal missiles will take care of that fact. Where do we go from there? Ukraine isn't a little heroic country trying to fight up. It's a terrorist criminal group. Stealing, deleting the wealth of the world at the moment. Freedom of the world. For its own purposes of this really disgusting, distasteful leadership in every country who are just like them. Now, when we're looking at this, we really, you know, you hear statements like this from a minister of defense, and you see how they're acting on the international stage. Where, you know, regardless, in diplomacy, you need to keep your head or you need to get out of the game. And they're not even trying. They're acting like little kids, little misbehaving children. And they're allowed on the world stage. And this is amazingly and critically bad. Critically bad. Now, I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams is making news after suggesting that Texas Governor Greg Abbott is looking to harm cities run by black mayors and by extension accusing him of being a racist. Adams was talking about Abbott's busing of illegals from Texas to various cities around the country, including New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Denver, and Washington, D.C. Adams' press release called the actions morally bankrupt and said it's also impossible to ignore the fact that Abbott is now targeting five cities run by black mayors. When asked about it, he pointed out he never used the word racist, but doubled down on Abbott.
Governor Abbott sent asylum seekers to New York, black mayor, to Washington, black mayor, to Houston, black mayor, to Los Angeles, black mayor, to Denver, black mayor. He passed over thousands of cities to land here.
You would think that former cop Adams, who was caught on video calling white police officers crackers in 2019, would be the last one to call anyone a racist. But you'd be wrong. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
Nuclear power offers abundant, concentrated energy for the world, which is necessary to lift people out of poverty. Modern nuclear reactors are safe and provide power 24/7 without pollution. Today, the world is undergoing a nuclear power renaissance. As of March 2022, 56 large reactors are under construction worldwide in 17 countries. Planning approvals exist for 96 reactors, which are mostly expected to be in operation within the next 15 years. A further 325 reactors are proposed in 30 countries, with specific programs or sites. The Western media ignores this reality, as most of the planned and proposed reactors are for China, Russia, and India. While the United States has only 2 reactors under construction and 3 planned, China has 19 under construction and 34 planned.
No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. Now we're going to switch to the U.S. of A. New York. Now we have the death of Jordan Mexico black man. And if you listen to the news, okay, if you read the headlines, all over the place it's saying he was lynched this week on the New York subway because he was a perceived threat. Now, I want to discuss this a little bit, and we need to put it in perspective. And this is going to be very, very important. So remember his name, Jordan Neely. Now, if we go back to October 2021, a woman on a train in Philadelphia was raped. And the riders did not help her at all. Instead, they held up their cell phones in the direction of the assault. They were freaking filming it. Filming the rape. All these people with cell phones, not one call to 911. No one called the police emergency number. No one. They sat, they watched, they did nothing. So police were dumbfounded. It was just crazy. It was just wow. But if we go back to February 2020, and we go to London, it gets even worse. Woman raped twice by sex attacker on the same tube train. And the man was charged with it. Ray Johnston, 36-year-old, is claimed to have preyed on the woman on the Piccadilly line in London between Heathrow and Hounslow West for 40 minutes. He raped her twice, and everybody took photos. No one called the police. He's in court right now saying, well, no one knows what they're talking about because he didn't hurt anybody. He raped a woman twice. Nobody helped. There seems to be like an epidemic of this. Nobody helped. Nobody, nobody, nobody. So now we're going to get to Jordan Neely. So now this guy, and they're trying to parade him around. If you look at all the videos, you see him dancing on a subway, mimicking Michael Jackson. There's a Michael Jackson impersonator for money. And he was part of a group. He pulled away from it over 10 years ago as his mental illness started taking over. The group were Michael Jackson impersonators, and they did shows once in a while. So they were actually organized. Now, those people said, geez, you know, we felt so bad when we heard about this. You know, he pulled away and, you know, I thought we should have checked on him, but, you know, we never did. And you have, and we're starting at the end of this for a reason. You have Democratic State Senator Julia Salazar comparing this horrific murder to a lynching. Alexandria Cortez is saying that he's guilty of murder, this man. You have all these BLM, all these Democrats standing up and saying he's a murderer, he's white, he's another white on black, murder, 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 this is definitely racist, murder, 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 lynching, lynching, lynching. Now, the first time I heard about this, it was with the lynching headline. I'm like, a guy got lynched in the subway? What the hell? And then I read the story, and here's what happened. Now, this guy has been arrested dozens of times for violent crimes, assault, etc. And they've got videos of him walking up to a random woman on said subway platforms, coming up behind him, grabbing them, and slamming them headfirst into subway cars. That's what he did for fun. You know, he's mentally ill. So what's going on here? Should this guy, who's been charged dozens of times, and when I say dozens, I'm talking, you know, I believe the number is 43 times or something, 44 previous charges. 44. No one ever thought to put him in a psychiatric facility and get him help. Way to go, Democratic New York. But they come out in droves and they say one of these the Democratic city counselors came out and said, yes, I saw him dancing on the subway once. It was so wonderful. This is a crime. A crime. it's a crime. Why? Because a white guy killed a black guy. And if you look at the stats on that, you know, regardless of what you're hearing, it's kind of an exception to reality. It just doesn't happen. Generally, it's the other way around. The black guys kill the white guys. White guys don't go out of their way to kill black guys. Those are just the statistics. Okay, reality. I mean, you know, less than a handful, all right, in cities that have hundreds and hundreds of murders, like New York. Doesn't happen. So now, Jordan Neely was on the subway, and he was threatening people with violence. He was threatening, he told them he was going to hurt somebody, and he didn't care if he went to jail for the rest of his life, and he was threatening them. Now, what are the odds that he was threatening women? Because his MO is grabbing women and hurting them. All right? So a white former, now they're saying he is a Marine, but he's a former Marine, out of the Marines. So we have, and one of the articles, it says his murderer, a white man, remains uncharged. Well, what he did was put him in a chokehold, okay, to restrain him. What the articles don't say is that another man that was holding one arm was a black guy, and another white guy was holding his other arm to restrain him. And they restrained him for about 50 seconds. He faded that quick. Okay. Now, obviously, the chokehold was put on wrong. But the fact that he was a threat, a problem, and you just had this whole bystander effect rape court decision in the media. And people, black and white, are getting sick of it. So these men decided to, to be men and protect the people on the train, and they stood up. Now, it went wrong. It did. But we're talking about it going wrong on a man that, mental illness or not, 44 previous charges, and a lot of it for violence and attempted violence. Should they have waited until somebody got hurt, till he actually attacked somebody? Now, you stop and you think about that, and your first thought is, okay, he hit somebody. No, he pulls a knife on somebody. Then it's too late. It's already too late. And now you grabbing him, it might be too late for you too, because you're going to get cut, depending on how he cuts you. You're going to get cut. You might get killed. So these three men went into that knowing that this could happen to them. And they thought about their fellow citizens enough to stand up for them. Now, when the police came, they talked to witnesses. And guess what? None of them were charged with anything. Now, it was the ex-Marine, the white guy, who did the chokehold. Based on the initial interviews, they let him go. Haven't charged him yet. So there's no charges on this. Now, if we look at what the autopsy said and how it reads, the autopsy itself reads, he died from compression to his neck as a result of the chokehold. That's the spokesman for the medical examiner. And they ruled his death a homicide. Now, that ruling means that the other passenger killed Jordan Neely, but this is not a finding of legal culpability. And that's from that report, the explanation for it. Now, legal culpability is, did he commit murder? He did kill him, yes, but is it murder? That is an entirely different thing. It was preemptive defense. It was defending other people on the train. Did they know what kind of weapons that Mr. Neely had or could have had? They couldn't have. To wait till after the fact, and then you have three people dead on a train and white guy chokes them out. We have to wait for three people to die, or two people to die, or one person to die. What if it's, you know, your husband that died, or your kid, or your wife, or your sister, or your mom? So what these men did, all three of them, is actually laudable. The result of it are, yes, it's tragic. A man died. But the man, you know, honestly brought it on himself. The fact that he wasn't in his right mind is actually an aside at this point. He's dead. If there's anyone responsible for that, it is the system, the city of New York, the police department, social services, any doctor that ever talked to him, because he was charged 44 freaking previous times. And you can't tell me that nobody saw this. It's just, come on. Right away, bang, the papers pick it up. Oh, he's a mental patient. He had mental issues. If they could know it, it was known. Why didn't anybody help him? Instead of addressing the real problems like mental illness, violence, crime, or homelessness, progressives are normalizing these things. And they gaslight people that call them out as unacceptable. And they denounce any attempts to actually fix the problems that have our cities in strangleholds. And they do it all in the name of compassion. That compassion is what actually killed Jordan Neely, along with his mental illness. Because his right to be mentally ill superseded, one, public safety, two, his right to be treated. Or I don't know if it's a right to be treated. I would hope that a homeless, mentally ill person has a right to be treated. How about that? I think that should be the case. So, if he's aggressively threatening people and moving toward them, you know, it's the second part of the question. Should people that can do something do something? Because if you have many more of these cases, it's going to all end up like those train rides where those women got raped and people took selfies. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be like an interview I listened to that, you know, a journalist photographed, videoed a guy walking up to a small child who was obviously lost at a train station, got within 5 feet of him, hesitated, and turned around and walked away. And when they were asked about it, he said, you know, I feel for the kid, but if I go over there and I try to help him, they're going to accuse me of kidnapping him. Do we want people really that want to help in those positions? Do we want to put them in that position? The answer is no, we don't. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio, and War of the Worlds tomorrow with John Helmer. We'll see you then.